This is Mary Vasquez Boyd for Art Speak Radio every Wednesday, noon to 1 o'clock. Thank you so much for tuning in or listening to us online at kkfi.org. As always, Wednesdays means that we have a lot of art and culture and really wonderful things to talk about that's happening in the Kansas City community. And, it's just lovely to be here and have so much to talk about. We've got poetry, we've got performance, we've got visual arts. We have a lot of different things going on. And I'm going to tell you today, our guests include Chris Daly, Kim Anderson, Dana Lenz, Tanya Northcraft, all from the Deaf Cultural Center. And I also have in the studio right here next to me, I have Paul Schoffer of the Kaufman Center for Performing Arts. He is the president and CEO. Also, later on in the second half, we'll be talking to Jenny Mendez and Anthony Marcos Rea from the Maddie Rhodes Art Center, and they're going to tell us about what's happening this weekend. You know, it's First Friday, and the weather is going to be terrific, so I hope you get out and see some great work in our community. So I want to introduce you to Paul Schoffer. As I mentioned, he's the president and chief executive officer for the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. And he's going to talk about the Future Stages Festival, because that's coming up on Sunday, June 25th. And we're going to talk about that and how to submit applications, because it's really intended for the community. Right, Paul? Welcome.
That's exactly right. And thank you so much, Maria. It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Well, this year, as you mentioned, June 25th, that's a Sunday afternoon from 11 to 4, we're going to have our fourth annual Future Stages Festival. And this is a terrific free community event. And during the course of the day last year, to give you a flavor for this, we put over 700 youth from our community on stage at the Kaufman Center. We have three different stages running, and every 30 minutes a different regional performing arts group goes on stage. And it's a terrific event, and it's very family friendly. We had somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 people show up last year.
Man, that's terrific. And I do want to mention again, it's the Future Stages Festival. It's free, and it turns a spotlight on youth performances and family-friendly programming, and that's what we love. We love to get the youth involved in the community, right?
That's exactly right. And in many cases, this performance on our stage at the Kaufman Center, for many youth in our community, they dream of the opportunity to perform on a world-class stage, and this turns that dream to a reality. For anybody interested, the application deadline is March 20th, so you still have a few weeks to apply, and you can do that at our website at kaufmancenter.org/future-stages.
Let's talk about some of the performance groups, what you've had in the past, what you're looking for, what is it you want from our youth?
You bet. Well, we like to have a little of everything. And certainly anybody coming to the Future Stages Festival or applying, we want a group that has a minimum of 5 performers on it. Mm-hmm. But it can be 50 as well. So we'll take any size there, and mostly youth. But what we love is the diversity of the performing arts community. So we'll have Irish dancers. We'll have a youth orchestra. We've had groups from the Alvin Ailey come over.
Beautiful.
And everything in between.
Wow. You know, and that's great, because celebrating diversity in the arts and creating those memorable experiences for young artists in the community is really life-changing. For some folks, right?
It does. Yeah. Access to the arts and experience in the arts absolutely is proven to develop lifelong attachments to the arts.
Now, is there an age limit, too,
for people who
perform?
We do want most of the performers to be youth, and what we look at is generally the 5 to 18 years of age range.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit of who we've seen. Do you have like spoken word poets, or are they mostly performers, musicians?
Yeah, you know, it's been a little bit of everything. Yeah. So we have the three stages. We'll use Muriel Kaufman Theater, we'll use Hellsburg Hall, and we'll have an outdoor stage. So we'll have some rock and roll going on, a lot of dance, ballet, different interpretive dance, and certainly some classical music as well along the way.
So the website will show you all the information that you need to know to submit an application, and that is the deadline is March 20th, so that's coming up. But it still gives you some time, right, to kind of consider what you might want to present?
You bet, you bet. Between now and then, it's making the application, and it certainly there is an element of this. It is a competitive process, mm-hmm. and we'll have mm-hmm. a group from our community evaluate and guide us in making the final decisions and who's selected. And we select about 25 groups. So during the course of that 11 to 4 o'clock, each group will be on stage for about 20 to 25 minutes, and then we rotate another group off.
That's terrific. So now this takes place Sunday, June 25th. But how soon will the applicants know if they've been selected?
You bet. It should be within about 4 to 5 weeks after the application process ends, or soon thereafter.
Beautiful. If you've just tuned in, this is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Paul Schoeffer, President and Chief Executive Officer for the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts, is here talking about the Future Stages Festival that's happening. It's the 4th.
It is the 4th.
It's really relatively new, but it's a wonderful opportunity that turns a spotlight on youth performances and family-friendly programming. But that will take place, the 4th Annual Future Stages Festival, Sunday, June 25th, and that's 11 o'clock in the morning till 4 p.m., and that's on various stages, right?
That's right. It's on three stages, and it's very family-friendly activity. So in addition to seeing some spectacular young performing artists on stage, there's a wide variety of other interactive events and activities for the family, and we'll have representatives from, I think it's about 20 community arts organizations, including the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. We'll have the Kansas City Symphony Instrument Petting Zoo. Representatives
like
from the Kansas City Zoo will be there. And lots of other activities for the whole family.
So it sounds like there's something just going on at every different
time.
Yeah,
nonstop.
I love that.
And you can come for an hour or you can come for 5 hours, whatever works for you. There's always something new and different going on.
Beautiful. Now, I do want to ask, for people who are listening and really are beginning to consider this, do you have to be a not-for-profit organization or group to apply for this?
Yeah, you don't have to be, and certainly that's where the majority of them come from, but you don't have to be. But as long as you have a group, as I mentioned, of five or more people, and the quality of what you're doing, you've proven and earned that, we'd love to have you.
Beautiful. And again, the ages are between 5 to 18 years of age, and groups are expected to be really active and performing and all that. But, you know, that age group needs to be moved a little bit more, because I want to bring my ukulele.
You want to bring the ukulele? Well, we'll make a special time for you, Maria.
And I want to mention the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. It's beautiful. I think it's just really just a gem in our city, and I love, and I'm so proud of the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts here in Kansas City. It's at 1601 Broadway Boulevard. And just real quickly, can you tell me a little bit of what's coming up around the corner aside from the Future Stages Festival and the application, the deadline?
I sure can. Yeah. And it is hard to imagine. We've been open over 5 years now.
Isn't that
crazy?
We
celebrated our 5-year anniversary last September. But our mission is to provide diverse and extraordinary performing arts experiences to community. And I think the month of March certainly is providing that. We have, as a taste of what's going on at the center, this Saturday night, Art Garfunkel will be there.
Wow.
So that's sold out already.
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
during the course of the month, in addition to our wonderful three residents, the Kansas City Symphony, Kansas City Ballet, and the Lyric Opera of Kansas City, we'll have a wide variety of other performances. Patti LaBelle will be on stage March 17th.
Just talking about that kid.
She's terrific.
Yeah.
The Oak Ridge Boys will be on stage March 26th. We have the Boston Pops. Ben Folds is coming with the symphony in mid-March. So a wide variety of events. Something for everyone.
Yeah, you know, in the time that you've been open, I've seen some really wonderful performances, opera and, you know, some speakers. Just really terrific lineup, you know, year after year, you know, for only 4 years.
It's been wonderful. And interestingly, after we opened, we fully expected, as many new performing arts centers do, that the number of performances would start to slow down.
Hmm.
And it's actually increased every single year since we're open. So it's really a tribute to our community and how much they are supportive of the arts.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to mention, as Paul said, Future Stages Festival. It is a free annual community event that turns a spotlight on youth performances and family-friendly programming. So each year, this festival, can you believe this, it puts more than 600 talented young performers on stage before live audiences. How exciting for that individual and their families and, you know, classmates and all. I mean, that's a nice little feather in your cap.
If you come by, there, you know, certainly watch what's going on stage, but there's nothing quite like looking at the audience and seeing the faces of friends and family members watching their child or brother or grandchild on stage performing in this world-class venue.
And I'm grinning just thinking of that because I've seen these faces of, you know, the pride and just, you know, the tears of seeing that. Their family member.
That's
stage.
Absolutely the case. I had one person who shared with me a couple years ago. They've performed on the stage several times, and they said that paled in comparison to seeing their child perform on stage.
Yeah, and you have to remember that this deadline is coming up, and this is only the 1st of March. You know, you can find that application form and any other information that you need at the website, which would be Future Stages at, that's the email.
Yeah, or kaufmancenter.org/future-stages.
Terrific. So what is the criteria that some of these groups will, the panelists will look at, the group
Well, they'll certainly want to see that the group has performed together historically and performed in the community already. So there's an element of this where it's earning the right to be on stage, and it's not just a given. And for many organizations, this is what they work towards during the course of the year. So we're looking for that passion, that commitment that has been demonstrated, and certainly providing some diversity to what's going on stage at the Kauffman Center.
Paul, you mentioned that in last year more than 5,000 people attended.
Yes. You know, our first year in 2014, we were hopeful that a couple thousand people would show up.
Uh-huh.
And I think it hit over 4,000, and it's been over 5,000, near 6,000 each of the last couple of years. So it's a great event.
And because you have such a large number of people that turn out for this, do you have to have reservations, or is it first come, first serve? How does that work?
You bet. You know, you don't have to have reservations, but it would really be helpful if you would go on our website and register, and that way it gives us a good gauge on what's going on at the center and to prepare accordingly. So that would be helpful. And when you're on the website, you can get a sense of what's going on during the course of the day from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
I think this was a terrific idea to get this Future Stages Festival going. And, you know, it's still in its very young stage, but it's really growing, isn't it?
That's exactly right. Yeah. We're only in our fourth year, and we're trying to ensure that it gets better every year.
So who doesn't want to perform at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts? 1601 Broadway Boulevard here in Kansas City, Missouri. It's just a beautiful structure. It's just, like I said, a gem to the city. Anytime I've been there to see a performance, I can't stop looking at those beautiful windows and that view. And any time of the day, it's just a gorgeous.
You know, I'm there every single day, and every single day I pinch myself. It is such a beautiful structure and such a wonderful addition to our community. It really has changed the landscape, literally and figuratively.
It really has. I know it was so exciting to see the various stages of building.
Yes.
You know, just an amazing structure, beautiful.
Yes. And it continues to be recognized in that manner. It was a few years ago when CNN reported in Porous Rankings the world's 15 most beautiful concert halls, and the Kauffman Center was one of only two in the United States on that list.
Isn't that great?
Kauffman Center and Disney Hall in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I believe it was last year when an organization came out with the most beautiful place to visit in each of the 50 states. And again, Kauffman Center was noted as the place to visit in the state of Missouri. So we're very proud and thrilled that we have this here in Kansas City.
And not only is it eye candy and very beautiful, but acoustically the sound is so crisp. And, you know, there's not a bad seat in the house or any of the stages.
That's exactly right. The acoustics are arguably some of the best in the world, if not the best in the world. And if you're in the very back row in either of the venues, it's like being in the A section of an arena. You are that close to the artists. And it's intended to be an intimate setting. And we've had artists like John Legend who came to the Kauffman Center because he wanted that intimate setting.
Yeah, and that's what I like too. I mean, the bigger arenas and all that are terrific, but I do want that intimacy. I do want that one-on-one in my mind of listening to an entertainer or a speaker.
That's exactly right. And somebody like Patti LaBelle, who will be here in a couple weeks, she energizes that whole venue and feeds off of the energy of that intimate setting that you're in. So please come by and see us.
Absolutely. Fourth Annual Future Stages Festival, Sunday, June 25th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, 1601 Broadway Boulevard here in Kansas City, Missouri. And the website is kauffmancenter.org. The deadline to submit applications is March 20th. So get that done, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. We look forward to seeing you and everyone there.
Beautiful. Any last words before we go to the next segment?
No, as I tell everyone, turn off the TV, get off the couch, come down and enjoy live performing arts experiences at the Kauffman Center or anywhere else in town. There's nothing quite like it.
You're right. Thank you so much, my friend. And come back anytime.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Maria.
You bet. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. Hey, and we're back. This is ArtSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Up next, I will be talking to members of the Deaf Cultural Center. Just dropped my paper. And I'll be talking to Chris Daly and Kim Anderson, Dana Lenz, Tanya Northcraft. They're all here in the studio. But we're going to give them just a little bit more time to set up, and we're going to record this on video for students and other members in the deaf community to view. So we'll be right back right after this. This is ArtSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So we had a little break so we could get set up for our next guest from the Deaf Cultural Center. And I want to welcome Chris Daly, who is the Vice President of the Deaf Cultural Center. and also Chris, Kim Anderson, who's on the board of directors with the Deaf Cultural Center. And I want to tell you that the Deaf Cultural Center is located at 455 East Park Street in Olathe, Kansas. And so we welcome you. Thank you so much for coming in today.
And thank you. Yes. Thank you for welcoming us.
You bet. And I want to mention to our listeners that there is a slight delay. We have our interpreter, Tanya Northcraft, here. Thank you, Tanya, for your service. Also, Dana Lenz, our videographer, is here. So there will be a slight delay between the questions and the answers. But I want to ask my first question, and I'm sure this is asked a lot. How long has the Deaf Cultural Center been open, and who does it serve?
Well, the Deaf Cultural Center has been incorporated since 1992, and they will serve anybody who is interested in learning about the history and the arts and the culture of diversity in deaf people. And their vibrant cultural linguistic community is also who it targets.
Beautiful. Are there other deaf cultural centers or museums around the country, or is this the only one in the Midwest?
The DCC Deaf Cultural Center is actually the only museum on deaf history, arts, and culture in the United States, and it's not affiliated with any school.
Uh-huh.
And the Deaf Cultural Center is actually a national treasure, right in the heart of the United States. And it's located in Olathe, Kansas.
It's wonderful. I've visited the center there last year, and I learned so much about the Deaf culture. But how do you begin to educate guests and visitors that don't have how do you educate guests and visitors about the history of deaf culture?
Well, when visitors come into the DCC, the first thing that we do is we greet them and we welcome them in, and we explain to them what the museum holds. We've got history and arts and culture, and we explain to them, and most of it is self-guided.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that they actually recognize when they arrive to our center is one of the exhibits, which is an annual exhibit. And that annual exhibit currently for 2017 is about language equality and acquisition for deaf kids. And it exhibits the national epidemic of language deprivation that is happening amongst deaf children in the United States. And it explains the journey of, you know, how to stop that epidemic that's going on. And it's actually a fascinating exhibit. And people can, you know, come in and take a look around, and it is self-guided, or they can also request a docent by appointment for just more expansion of that exhibit.
Wow. You know, there are so many things that I learned on my visit there. One was many alarms that is used every day for the doorbell ringing, or, you know, just things that hearing community takes for granted. What other things can you talk about that we as hearing individuals would not know otherwise?
Sure. We also provide different experiences inside the museum. We've got several different exhibits. And the first thing that most visitors have a high chance of seeing are actually deaf volunteers themselves inside the museum. And then they will experience the Living by the Eye exhibit, which we have. And then they'll also experience deaf space. That is the that is what you mentioned, Maria, about doorbells and different alarms. So we do have special exhibits that show that. And then we've also got exhibits that show different paths of oppression that deaf people experience. And we've also got exhibits about achievements and contributions made by different deaf people that have contributed to society. So we've got several different things going on.
It was beautiful to see the academics and the sports, that I think perhaps we don't really consider or think about being a real strong in the deaf community. And I don't know why that would be a surprise, but, it's just wonderful to see that so much diversity within the deaf culture. I want to remind listeners that if you've just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I am talking to Chris Daly, who is the Vice President of the Deaf Cultural Center, also Kim Anderson, who is on the Board of Directors, and we have interpreter Tanya Northcraft and a videographer, Dana Lenz. We're talking about the Deaf Culture Center, and its mission is to provide educational and resourceful programs and activities to inspire a deeper appreciation and understanding of the lives of diverse deaf people, including their language, culture, experiences, achievements, and contributions worldwide. So I do have to ask, is there a fee, is there a membership available to the Deaf Culture Center?
Yes, we do actually have membership available. If you want to just come take a visit, you're free to come in and take a visit and take a tour. But if you would like to get membership, you can look at our website or talk to somebody at the DCC.
Yeah, and that website is deafculturalcenter.org, and they're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, so don't go there on Mondays and Tuesdays. They're open Wednesday through Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m., and then Sunday, noon to 5 p.m. Are there any upcoming activities or events that you want to share with our listeners? I know that when I was there, I saw a lot of art. I think it was Devia, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So are there upcoming events that you want to share with us?
We do have an event coming up in March. It's actually March 21st. It starts at 5:30, and it is an event targeted to the youth. It is it's an old-fashioned circus that we have coming to the DCC, and it is organized by our wonderful volunteers who themselves are deaf. And it gives, children the opportunity to come visit the Deaf Cultural Center at the same time, and it's a great event for families.
Well, cool. You say a circus. So are we talking elephants, giraffes, or mostly clowns, or just, a great time?
Yes, mostly clowns. I don't think we're big enough for large animals, but we do have clowns and activities and food, and we'll also have a dog show doing just different dogs doing some tricks. So small, cute, old-fashioned circus is what we have going on.
You know what? That sounds fun, an old-fashioned circus, especially there on the grounds of the center there. And, again, that's 455 East Park Street, Olathe, Kansas. You also host different activities or discussion groups, workshops. Did I understand that there's some different sort of groups that you do or you work with in the community?
Yeah, we do have activities every month. Our most popular activity is the hands-on activity, and it can be both for children and adults, but it's mostly popular with the children. And it's an opportunity for field trips, school field trips to come, or we've got Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts that come and just to come and learn more about deaf culture and learn about American Sign Language. We've got story time in American Sign Language that we do for the children. And also, the Girls and Boy Scouts are able to earn a badge if they complete the activity. So it's actually a wonderful, popular event.
Great.
And there is more information on that available on our website.
I failed to ask you, how long has the Deaf Cultural Center been on the grounds there at in Olathe? How many years have you been there?
Actually, since 1992.
Okay. Terrific. Now, it's a beautiful building, and you've got quite a bit of land that surrounds it. Are there any plans to expand, or the physical space, the location, or whatnot?
We don't have any current plans to expand, but the board is actually in discussion and trying to consider how we can utilize that land and hopefully expand the building in the future. Right now, we're just really focused on the exhibits. We've had the same exhibits for many years, so we'd actually like to refresh and update the information inside the museum. That's actually a priority for us, and the building itself is being used at full capacity, so it would be nice, you know, for the board to start considering expanding the capacity of the building in the future.
I just wondered about that because that, again, that space just lends itself to movement, you know, to, you know, a bigger space. So I just had to ask you that question. So, again, if you've tuned in, I'm talking to staff. I'm talking to Chris Daly, who's the Vice President of the Deaf Cultural Center, Kim Anderson, Board of Directors, Tanya Northcraft, who's the interpreter today, and Dana Lenz, the videographer. I would encourage you to check out their website, deafculturalcenter.org. And, again, they're in Olathe. Free admission and parking, you know. Learn about the culture. And, you know, one thing that people may have in mind is that ASL, American Sign Language, there's so many different ways to sign. For instance, there's signing in Spanish and French and all. So not all the sign language is going to be the same, right?
That's correct. Every country has their own sign language, and so American Sign Language, which is ASL, is popular in America, and then, you know, there's Spanish Sign Language, there's also British Sign Language, Japanese Sign Language, there's a variety, yep.
Is there any, are there some signs that are sort of common between the different languages? I mean, with Spanish and Italian, there's some words that are similar, and I just wonder if it's the same with signing.
There may be a few signs. For example, eating or food is, the sign of bringing your hand to your mouth. Uh-huh. So I could see that being a common sign, but every sign language has their own vocabulary, their own grammar, their own syntax, so it is very different between different countries. And we also have sign language, which is called International Sign Language, which, pulls in some of the similarities between the different languages, and it uses more obvious signs that people, you know, internationally could probably catch on to.
Beautiful. Is there anything that you want, any last words, final words that you want to mention? Anything that's coming up that we haven't talked about as we wind down?
I think just one, fun fact for our listeners is if they come to the Deaf Cultural Center, is one thing they would learn about is how the football huddle was invented. You know, when you're watching your football games on TV, you see the players that come together in a huddle to talk about their strategies and plays. That was actually invented by a deaf player by the name of Paul Hubbard.
Wow.
And, they originally invented it because they didn't want the other team to see them signing their game plan. So they kind of got into a huddle to block the other team. And then, other football teams caught on to the idea and they liked it.
See, I love this. You know what our listeners don't know? They need to get out there to the cultural center and find out all about what they don't know. Right? Want to mention that Sandra Kelly, she just recently retired or is going to retire, so should we give a shout-out to her?
She will be retiring soon in April, and after her 9 years of service to the Deaf Cultural Center, that's correct.
She won't be able to stay away.
Right.
Very good.
Yeah, she enjoys it so much, but she's going to take a break and then come back and visit, I'm sure.
Beautiful. Well, I want to thank you so much, Chris Daly, the Vice President of the Deaf Cultural Center. Also, Kim Anderson, who's on the Board of Directors. Thank you to Tanya Northcraft as for interpreting this episode, and Dana Lenz for videographer here in the studio. Thank you so much. Come back anytime, please. Share with us more information, more events. We'll get you out. We'll get you back in the studio. All righty. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio right after this.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, two takes of a movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is a compelling documentary about James Baldwin and three of his personal acquaintances. And the movie is called I Am Not Your Negro.
This was filmed recently, however. The documentary has film clips from 1979 when James Baldwin was writing this book. And he wanted to capture what it was like for Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King to all be killed even before they were 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
James Baldwin was living in Paris, and he decided to come back to America to witness what was happening in his community.
Right. And it's a really compelling, interesting film, mainly because of the ability of James Baldwin to put the anger, the fear, and context of the African-American experience into words and do so in a way that can make the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
He, in fact, reminded me of a male version of Maya Angelou.
Hmm.
His smile and his poetic way of talking had that impact. You just had to listen to what he was saying.
Yes, and he was an angry man.
Mm-hmm.
Justifiably so.
Absolutely.
But he was also at least attempting to be a bridge builder. He says in the film that he's not a racist,
right,
but he wanted to shake people up and make them realize the reality around them and how it was so negatively affecting the African-American community.
That interview with Dick Cavett was very revealing because Dick Cavett was clueless.
Right.
When they were talking about the black experience or the African-American experience, James Baldwin had answered, you know, I feel my countrymen are my enemy.
That's the Oscar-nominated documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
And I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, just caught in the middle of picture taking. So let me get my headphones on and head back to Outspeak Radio every Wednesday, noon to 1 on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. All right. Up next, we have the beautiful and talented Anthony Marcus Ray. He's the Cultural Arts Coordinator for the Maddie Rhodes Art Gallery, and that's at 919 West 17th Street here in Kansas City, Missouri. And, Anthony, we're going to talk about the Women's History Month, the Mujer Women Latino Artists as Examiners, Documenters, and Creators. Let's talk about that, Anthony, shall we?
Thank you. Let's do talk about that. I'm so happy that I made it here somewhat on time. I apologize.
I was sweating bullets, kid.
I know. We were too. Mujer, Woman, Latino Artists as Examiners, Documenters, and Creators was really something that came out of a conversation I had with one of our older artists, longtime artists, let's just say that, with Maddie Rhodes Center. Being 2 years into the organization, the question was posed, well, where are our women artists, our Latina artists? And I really personally did not know, being returning to the city. And so we sat and talked some, and we looked at this idea, and Women's Month was coming up. And I was like, it's not that we haven't ever had a women's show before,
sure,
at the organization.
Sure.
But this show was really posed at seeing what women artists of color, Latino artists, were doing today in Kansas City now, mm-hmm, whether individually, collectively, as it relates to community, the art world, and just at this moment in time,
yeah,
in history.
Yeah.
And so that happened last year for 2016. It's 2017, we're redoing that again. And I'm really, really excited to see how it's kind of growing for us and the work that will be coming out of that.
You know, and I think It's always important. It's always important to see what comes out of work from the Latinas, the community. But, you know, there's been just the most recent digs or women being sort of downplayed or, you know, just being really fully disrespected.
Well,
in the politics, especially, is what I'm referring to. And then pair that with being a Latina, you know, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of probably some, reaction to that, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of material to address, right?
And I
think that's why shows like this are even ever more important. One, to both celebrate this time, this month,
right.
But also to really highlight and discuss the things that probably are left out of our daily conversations.
Yeah.
What's really exciting about for us in this show is the artists that we have. So we do have activists and community workers who are going to be showing works and documentation of what they do. Another artist who will be sharing photographs of a project around homelessness. So this is what we're hoping to see, and even maybe possibly being a catalyst for a Latino artist collective of sort, and that's, you know, my hopes, dreams, and I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I love collaboratives, and I think it's even more important when you're talking about groups, communities of color, artists of color, women of color, and to be able to formalize that, especially now in this city with the ever-growing population. Latino population that's happened, that's going, and obviously with our current political situations that we are all in and facing. But I would like to mention a couple of the artists that we're showing.
Please,
is that okay?
Yeah.
So like I said, we have Celia Ruiz, who is a Chicago, Kansas City activist, organizer, and she will be showing some of her documentation, art posters she's making, and she has made over the past year for the various different actions she's been a part of. But we also have the work of Sharon Rodriguez, who's currently working on a homelessness project out of Shawnee Mission, Johnson County, we'll have the work of Vanya Soto. We'll also have the work of Sue Moreno. And oh my God, I just
Marbel Matson.
Marbel Matson. Yes, thank you. I have my list here too. One of my, she's not my favorite, but I have many favorites. But Christina Margarita Rives, who is here in Kansas City at the, forgot that residency program she's a part
Charlotte
of.
Charlotte Street?
No, the other big one.
Arts KC.
Over there. I cannot think of the name, and I apologize to her, but she does these amazing ceramic pieces. Please come out and check what she's doing. Coco Rico. And then another artist out of Texas, Ruby De La Fuente, who will be showing some work as well. But I think it's a great group of work and a collection of documentation that we'll be able to see and see what women artists are doing here, how they are working within communities, collectively and also individually.
Now, that first Friday opening night is this Friday.
Yes, ma'am.
March 3rd from 6 to 10, and that's at the Maddie Rhodes Art Gallery, 919 West 17th Street. But, I'm going to take a real quick break. We've got just a little bit of underwriting to air. And then we're going to come back because I want to talk about some workshops that you have in conjunction with this exhibition.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, very good. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio. Yay, we're back to me. Anthony's taking selfies, Anthony. I'm talking to Anthony Marcus Frere with the Maddie Rhodes Arts Center. He is the Cultural Arts Coordinator. We're talking about the first Friday opening night of Mujer Women Latino Artists as Examiners, Documenters, and Creators for this first Friday opening night, 6 to 10 at Maddie Rhodes Art Gallery, 919 West 17th Street. Hello, friend.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. So before the break, we were going to talk about the workshops that are that you'll be serving up this in conjunction with this exhibition. And then there's also, let's talk about the gallery discussions that's going to take place.
Yeah. So, I mean, for every exhibition, there is a series or a workshop attached to it. And this one, it's a fun one for us. It's our resin and bottle cap pins and magnets workshop. We were just looking at ways to kind of expand on what we're already doing in some of our own objects that we make and sell in the gift shop. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be using resin and adding some, creating bottle cap necklaces, bottle cap pins and things along those lines using resin, imagery. Mm-hmm. And this particular workshop is focused on significant women artists, women of color, mm-hmm. things like that people are inspired by. So I'm personally going to make me a bell hooks button. I'm possibly going to make me a Gloria Anzaldúa button. We'll have some imagery that people people are also encouraged to bring some of their own imagery they mm-hmm. want to use. And playing around with the jewelry making and the resin, which is really fun in itself. It makes everything look really cute and shiny.
Now, with the resin, though, will you be able to make it and take it home?
You'll probably let it dry overnight and schedule a pickup for that. It does take some time to set.
And also with those bottle cap pins, what works really well as far as the images of the Loteria cards, if you cut them mm-hmm. apart and then they have
patterns and glitter. Yeah. So we'll have big buttons, little buttons, big cap, bottle caps, little caps. So, we can use some glitter. We can get real fun with this.
So if I give you a picture of myself, you could make one for me?
Sure. Yes. Yes, we can. And we'll use that good Martha Stewart glitter. Because that's a good glitter out there. I have to admit it. Yeah. But I'm sorry. Let's be professional.
You're good.
But that'll be happening March 11th, and people uh-huh. can register through email. And our online registrations needs to be set up real quick, but that'll be coming shortly. And it's a $30 fee to get some expert jewelry making skills and use of resin. And you get to make what you take. You get to take what you make. Yeah. And it could be a good gift or just something you want to wear. But then towards the end of the month, we're having on March 25th is our gallery discussion, making space as artists and community, and really hopefully we would like to have those artists that are part of the show, mm-hmm. but also other artists that come through and kind of talk in more of a round table scenario to discuss what women artists are doing, how mm-hmm. can how can we be supportive of one another, how can we continue to showcase and highlight the things that are happening. Obviously, Kansas City has its grown. It's in this moment with itself. What about those younger artists who might need mm-hmm. some inspiration and motivation from
and
a
mentors.
Woman that looks like them?
Yeah.
You know, that comes from their community. This is important because that idea of passing on information and sharing knowledge is not just related to women, but just artists and community work in general.
You know, and I would actually maybe invite or encourage organizations such as Charlotte Street, mm-hmm. Artists Inc., some of these arts, KC, some of these local arts organizations who are not always aware that Latina artists are here in the community. I mean,
good one. I will do that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bottle cap with my face.
Do I have to pay you for that?
Go ahead.
And there's one more thing I do want to mention, because it's something that we're trying and we're trying, and it's actually going to happen the following day after the opening on the 4th. We're going to start having these, for the lack of a better term, pop-up gift shop artist sales.
Okay.
The first one scheduled for March 4th is for Rossetti's Thread, who is ran by and made by Angie Rossetti.
Hmm.
Her and her family will be leaving Kansas City for some new adventures on the West Coast. And we want to help sell and help her get rid of her materials. She makes some amazing patterned aprons and really beautiful work fabrics that she's using in her pot holders and some new stuff that she's never shown with us before. We're calling it her moving sale because she's moving.
That
will be the following day from 12 to 5. We love what she does, and we want to help support her as her and her family make this transition out of the city to some new stuff. So please come through for that. And all that information can be found on our Facebook, Instagram pages, and all that good stuff.
Maddie Rhodes, RHODES.org. And I want to mention that first Friday opening night is this Friday, March 3rd, 6 to 10 o'clock at the Maddie Rhodes Art Gallery at 919 West 17th Street. Again, MaddieRhodes.org. You can call 816-221-2349. Also, the workshops that Anthony had mentioned, the resin and bottle cap pins and magnets. That workshop is going to be held Saturday, March 11th from 1 to 3. Give a call or set up your reservation through Maddie Rhodes. Also, the gallery discussions, Making Space as Artists and Community, Saturday, March 25th, 1 to 2:30 p.m. And that's going to be open to the public. Talking about current artists and groups discussing the presence and impact of women artists of color and their role as community workers and such. Anthony, thank you so much
for coming in. Thank you for being patient and waiting for me.
Oh, no. I know you'll... You know, there's so much happening in our lives that I know you... I kind of saw you through the window skid on two wheels as you pulled
in. I didn't hit the person.
No, I'm sorry. Well, that's so wrong.
I know.
That's so wrong. It's right again. I love you. Love you,
no,
Anthony.
But, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. Maddie Rhodes, first Friday opening this March 3rd. This is March already. So I want to thank all my guests who showed up today on the program. Many thanks to Chris Daly, Paul Schofer, Kim Anderson, Dana Lenz, Tanya Northcraft, of course our beautiful Anthony Marcus Rea. Next week, March 8th, can you believe it already? Maura Garcia will be here, Guillermo Sanchez, the executive director of Albrecht Kemper Museum, Brett Knapp, will be here. Also, we will have Jackie Denning, artist, here in Kansas City, in studio, live. So I want to encourage you to stay tuned for Jeff Harshbarger, my Jeffy Jeff. He's got jazz in the afternoon. And I want to thank you all for listening today, tuning in to ArtSpeak Radio. Please like us on Facebook. No. Please love us on Facebook because we love you. And again, thank you so much for tuning in today. And now I'm going to say it, honey, I'm coming home.